Hey guys, I'm here to tell you about Space Rehearsal and Recording, a uniquely Austin experience preserving its musical heritage while inspiring future artists. Space is an affordable venue for rehearsal and recording situated just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. With 31 spacious rooms, wide gallery-lit corridors, and excellent parking, they have the space to help you with your creative endeavor. You can join their customers that range from local and international musicians, acting troupes, yoga practitioners, performance artists, and you know who else? Me! Yeah, I'm in Skyrocket. We have a room there. We rehearse there. I'm there a lot. So I'm speaking from experience. I'm not just hawking this stuff, man. I go there. Look, maybe you're practicing in your garage right now, and it's great. But you know what? Summer's coming up. You ever practice in your garage in summer? It sucks. So call down to Space, 512-448-9518, or go to spaceatx.com. Tell them that you heard about them on How Did I Get Here. They will give you one free hour when you book your rehearsal block there. So, hey, man, it's worth it. Try it out. It also, they know that this advertising is working. So be sure you bring it up when you go down there. Plus, you'll get a free hour. All right? Just call 512-448-9518, Space Rehearsal and Recording. Tell them you heard about it on How Did I Get Here, and they will give you a free hour. Now, let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Howdy.
All right. Hello, people. How are you doing? I hope you're doing well. I'm doing well. I want to thank you for listening to this show because I know that it's a choice that you make. It's not just something you happened upon. You actually have to go out and actively listen to it. So thank you so much for doing that. Our audience has been growing steadily for the last couple years. We are now in our third year. We are approaching our third South by Southwest. I have, tonight after I finish doing this, I'm going to have to sit down and do some more confirming. We're getting some guests. Looks like we're even getting some cooler guests as of yesterday. So I'm very excited about it. Next few months for this show are going to be great. I hope that you enjoy them. Let me tell you about my guest today. Fantastic. Aaron Jonathan Black from the band Scorpion Child. You might have seen them just this weekend. They were on Saturday, February 22nd, on That Metal Show, which is my favorite show, talking to Eddie, Jim Florentine, and Don Jameson about their band, about their upcoming European tour, about their record Scorpion Child. They, in fact, named Scorpion Child's, it's their self-titled album, one of their top five releases of 2013. So look, man, Scorpion Child is a rock and roll band, and I've seen these guys around for a while. They're friends of my cousins. I also just kind of like frequented the same place, and we have some similar friends, and so I'd see them from time to time, say hey. They were always very friendly. I never really saw them, but once I heard their record, I flipped out. It was produced by my friend Chris Frenchie Smith, who's a fantastic producer here in town, does a lot of great work, has worked with people like The Darkness and the Dandy Warhols, and tons and tons of other bands. I don't even know where to start. And you will know it's by the Trail of Dead. Anyway, this is a rock and roll album that, like, it sounds like it's peeling the paint off your walls, which you need sometimes. A dude yelling, blues-based, fucking fast, loud, rock and roll screaming. You need that. You get that with Scorpion Child. So you will enjoy my conversation with Aaron. You know, you might sit around with your friends sometimes and go like, oh, what's happening to rock and roll? Because I know a lot of people that listen to this show, they're in bands. Or they listen to bands, and they follow music, and they go see bands, and they go to festivals, and they see bands. But the band thing isn't as mainstream as it once was, which is weird. It's kind of fallen out of fashion. Still totally fucking cool. You still get off listening to a band like Scorpion Child, but it's just not coming out like it once was. Remember in the early 2000s, there was that resurgence with the Hives and the Strokes and the Vines and the White Stripes and all these bands. And a lot of them, they just didn't really keep up with the thing because taste change. Now we're listening to a little bit more popular sound, which, hey, I'm not knocking it. I know things have to change, but I like to know that rock and roll and loud rock and roll and four-dude rock and roll, guitar, bass, and drums rock and roll, is still a viable thing. No offense against jazz, but I don't want it to go by the way of jazz as some antiquated art form like, oh, you play rock? Wow. You know, like, you know, you must be on that weird label like Blue Note or something. You know what I mean? Like there's one rock. Oh, I know a rock. I knew a guy that played rock once. I don't want that to happen. I want rock to keep on being alive, keep on changing, keep on being fresh. And even though Scorpion Child's sound harkens to another time, their energy is fresh. It's rebellious. It sounds dangerous. You don't know what's going to happen. That's what I miss of rock and roll. That's what I miss of rock and roll. That's what Scorpion Child brings to the table. They bring back the danger. There used to be this place called Steamboat here in Austin. I used to play it. I had a residency there. But they had these cool-ass shirts at one point in the 90s that said, "Remember when sex was safe and rock and roll was dangerous?" That's what Scorpion Child will remind you of. Now, sit down and enjoy my conversation with Aaron. Get over to that metal show. It was just on this last Saturday, February 22nd, 2014. Lamb of God was the main guest, so I know they re-air those shows a lot, but check it out. It's cool to see a guy like that on TV. It's cool to see a show like that recognizing a new band playing fucking face-melting rock and roll, all right? Sit down and enjoy my conversation with Aaron Jonathan Black from the rock and roll band Scorpion Child. Let's get down, people. Child, do you know if there's any catering backstage that I can have?
He was asking me if there's food. Yeah, like, so
what? Some of those guys. Well, if I would have gone to your thing, I would have. Have you ever cleaned out anyone's backstage? You've been invited to a show by a more famous rock band than yourself. And they go like, "Hey, I hang out backstage," and then you just fucking clean them out and leave.
Yeah, because we need it. We're hungry.
Yeah, I've done that. I did a tour. Do you know who Ian Moore is?
Yeah, yeah.
I did a tour opening for him with my band, and at night we would leave him messages because he'd go on stage and do the headlining set, and then we would take a lot of his stuff and like, "Hey, we took three bananas, half your cereal, some chips, and we drank half your Jameson's. We were really high and had the munchies. Sorry, bro. See you tomorrow." In Philly. You know what I mean?
And obviously he doesn't care.
No. He got a lot of mileage out of telling the story about our notes.
Mm. Yeah, you guys were honest about it.
Aaron, yeah. Yeah, we weren't sneakies. Mm-hmm. So, man, I was saying that I thought I didn't know if it was you or Sean because I associate you guys so much together, mm-hmm. you know? And not in a bad way. I had a long time like a partner, your business partner, your cohort, your, mm-hmm. you know, your guy that's like the other guy in the band that you guys are always like plotting. To me, you guys were always like, just I've seen you around now for years, right? And you mm-hmm. guys were always like on your way to something, doing something, you always looked fucking cooler than anyone else. You know what I mean? Like, you mean business? We had that, we were both at that same like weird rehearsal space over on South First for a little while. See you guys there. And now things have blown up for you guys over the last few years, sticking with it and just really developing your sound. And I'll start this by saying congratulations, man. I'm very happy to see all the stuff that's happening.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah. And I mean, I know it's tough to get tours. It's tough to get records out. It's tough to get your record recognized in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And especially being rock and roll. Being like a band with guitars and drums and 1, 2, 3, 4 fucking screaming like let's go. It's not that's not what people are really talking about these days.
It's sad.
It is sad. But you're in a world where it's alive. I mean, you guys playing festivals and you're touring ourselves with other bands and people are coming to those shows. So mm-hmm. do you feel like rock is alive under something? Bubbling under.
Definitely when you're in Europe, you feel like it's alive and very well.
I just heard that on that metal show the other day. I watched it, and yeah. they were saying something about how, like, it's not like here. It's still going. Like, there's still rock and roll happening.
It is. There's still an appreciation for it, you know.
How many times have you guys gone over there?
No. We just been over once.
Okay. But it was great.
So far. And we're about to go again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was excellent.
What kind of shows were you playing? Were you in support of someone, or?
We did the first half of Europe, the European tour, we were supporting a band called Orchid from San Francisco, which they don't play in the U.S. They only play over there. So they're like, they're big over there, you know. What so kind they'd, of? They'd be selling out, you know, 600 people clubs and, you know, sometimes more.
Yeah.
And another band from Sweden called Blues Pills.
That's a great name.
Yeah, yeah.
What people, kind of band were they?
People
were they
mistake
more of a rock
them for
band?
Blue Spills all the time. They don't like it.
Blue Spills.
Yeah, they're like bluesy. They're female fronted, like bluesy rock band. You know, yeah. And Orchid are like Sabbath metal.
That's
know,
cool.
So we were like right in the middle.
Yeah.
It was cool.
What did you grow up listening to? What was your choice?
Well, I'd say like the first thing that I really latched onto as a kid was heavy metal. We used to have like this heavy metal show that came on at like 1 a.m. and I would like sneak some headphones in the bed and, you know, everybody was asleep and I would just blast, you know, Suffocation and
I don't know those bands, but
Morbid Angel.
Right, yeah, no Morbid Angel.
Yeah, just really heavy metal. And that's where I discovered Tool.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, for the first time, because they would put stuff like Monster Magnet. They'd put like Caius and Tool.
Yeah.
They would get you also into the...
What was this? Was it MTV or was
this
it...
This was in St. Louis.
Oh, it was in St. Louis.
It was just a KSHE-95, a local radio station in St. Louis.
Oh, it was a radio show. Okay.
It was Monday Night Metal.
Okay.
Monday Night Metal. So that's what got me into metal, and from metal I got into punk.
Okay.
Because as a teenager, you can't play metal.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
you're
yeah.
trying to figure it out.
Level
you know,
of sophistication you can't get to. Yeah, yeah.
But you got some cool chords, and you more or less become like hardcore, like a hardcore band. Because
yeah.
you're trying to, you know.
What's the fast that you want to do?
Yeah, it's
like
the fast.
You, yeah,
and,
you want to play fast. Yeah.
And you go back and listen to those recordings, and you're like, man, that was awesome.
Yeah.
We had so much aggression. And.
So how old were you when you started your first band?
Oh, man, probably. Well, my first band never got out of the basement, but we were good.
Yeah.
And I was probably 13 or 14.
Yeah, same here.
Awesome, right?
Yeah, awesome. Just even not getting out of the basement, just the being in the basement.
Yeah, where'd you grow up?
Well, I mean, doing it like in the Woodlands, that's where I was in junior high and stuff.
Houston.
Yeah, yeah. You're friends with my cousin Emily, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And Megan.
Which Megan?
Who worked at Joe's too? My
oh,
cousin
yeah,
that worked
yeah,
at Joe's.
Yeah.
We look a lot alike.
Okay,
yeah. I've got baby pictures. I'll show you. They're on my fridge.
Awesome.
Actually, I have Emily's junior high picture that's there just for guests that know her. And then I pull it out and show it to them. And then I call her and tell her, hey, I showed them that picture you hate. And she gets really mad. Anyway, yeah, so yeah, we did it there. It was the early 80s. And I actually have pictures of our first gig. Our first venture out of the garage. So what was the name of the band?
What would the name of that one? That one would have been called Forefront.
Okay. That's a good name.
And then, I had a band actually earlier than that. I forgot about it. We were called Chota Gravel.
What is that?
It was like funk metal, like Primus weird.
Oh, that's cool.
It was the very first thing that I did, and it was really strange. We were into like suicidal tendencies and just weird stuff.
Were you doing your own stuff or were you trying to do their tunes?
No, we were doing our own stuff. Like,
see, that's also gratifying. Like when you have a song and you play through it the first time and you're...
I think I didn't do a cover until this band.
Oh, really? What do you guys cover? That's it.
No,
that'd be interesting to find out.
We covered some Ramones, I think, back in the day, too. But we've covered a lot of stuff. Everything from ZZ Top to Rocky Erickson and
oh, that's cool.
On our album, we have a cover of Lucifer's Friend, a song called "Keep Going." It's like a bluesy number.
Uh-huh.
They're a German prog rock band, krautrock kind of heavy. You know.
So, what years was this when you were starting your bands? Because Caius was out, so it was in the '90s.
Yeah, it was about 90, I'd say 93.
Okay.
Like, I remember we had all just gotten, you know, Siamese Dream by Smashing Pumpkins. You know, Nirvana was...
Were you into that stuff, or were you into more underground stuff?
No, I mean, I was also... The first Nirvana song I ever heard was Teen Spirit on the radio, and was like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you will, you know?
Like, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it... You know, it... But I was listening to like Maiden before that, and Priest, and like all the metal stuff that I've kind of now doing is stuff that I listened to first, probably.
Have you done anything with Alice in Chains, or did you get into that?
Oh, of course I did. Yeah. Dirt.
Because they seem to be that they've been, because they preceded just by a little bit. Because I remember I got
Soundgarden, Bad Motor Finger.
Yeah, yeah.
It was all a part of our like recipe for trying to go in the basement and play something.
Yeah. To me, Alice in Chains is really one of the best bridges of metal into grunge. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's a band where you can see how the transition from, you know, a metal band to Pearl Jam went.
Sometimes
you know what I mean?
I tell people we're grunge just to make it easy. Because what the hell is that?
I don't know.
Like, grunge was like the last classic rock.
There's a level of
wave.
Celebration to your music. I think that grunge is, there was a downtroddenness to, everything was, there was nothing happy going on with those dudes, man. Everything was a little slower. Things were tuned down.
Some degree, yeah.
There wasn't a lot of happiness going on. Everyone was a little...
But it was the last great wave of classic rock that we had. Think about it. I mean, you know, you had the Hives, you had the Strokes, you had, you know, Wolfmother and bands that kind of came... But Wolfmother is almost still a part of the beginning of what...
Yeah.
Graveyard and...
Right.
I mean, there was a middle ground where there was nothing happening, really, but I mean... It's still not like, I mean, progressive, like Soundgarden and Alice in Chains were, like, they were, you know, these bands were at a little, they were out there a little bit.
I went to the record store, and my friend David Von Roller King worked there, who I'm still friends with, and I said, hey, I need to get something new, whatever, something that's going to be real cool. He's like, I got two records that came out in the last couple of weeks. One of them is this guy, Seal. I think you'll like it.
Seal.
Very first Seal record. Never even heard of him. That crazy. He hadn't really been a hit or anything. So he gave it to me. And then he goes, oh, and this, Alice in Chains. And like, Alice in Chains.
Was
like,
it like Facelift era?
The very first record, the Man in a Box.
Facelift.
Yeah, Facelift. I was just like... Like, I was stunned at how amazing it was. But, like, they even invented a harmony sound that I'd never heard before. Like,
that
the way
cool.
that they sang together.
But you look at them and you look at my, Mother Love Bone, and it's still, like, the end of 80s rock.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hair metal.
Yeah.
And so it was that first Alice in Chains record. Because you listened between that and, like, the Sap EP, where it was, like, acoustic. Like, they ended up, like, joining it with Jar of Flies, which came after Dirt. But Dirt was such a departure, both lyrically, like the darkest possible subject matter. I mean, you know, Lane was definitely in the hardest place of his life at that point, but the whole texture of that album is so far beyond Facelift. There's nothing glam about
it. No, not at all.
Which was really where I think that band came to be.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's true. You know, I got to meet and hang with Jerry a few times. A few times. I got to see him play a record that he had made of his own in front of Bon Jovi. And Sheryl Crow and John Bon Jovi walked out of the room. Like, after the... And it was like, I got to see Jerry Cantrell be like, yeah, pussy. Or whatever, like when John Bon Jovi walked out of the room. It was a very surreal scene. Have you been in any scenes like that lately? I saw that...
Why would he do that? I mean, what were his motives behind
to walk out of the room?
The exit, yeah. What was his exit strategy?
Okay, look, this is the scenario that it was. I was in a band that was on a label that was owned by Lars Ulrich, and we were our record had been mixed by a guy named Jack Joseph Puig in L.A. And then our band was in L.A. He was mixing Bon Jovi "It's My Life" during that time. So it's like what, early 2000. like January 2000
or
something.
That I know nothing
whatever.
About.
Yeah. So Jerry was hanging with Lars because Lars was thinking about signing him to his label. And Jerry was running around with the new copy of his album. Jack Joseph Puig had a party.
The new Alice in Chains album?
No. It's just a solo Jerry album.
Oh, it was
album.
Jerry. Okay.
It was
yeah.
like whatever he had done then. After the one where he was wearing the tie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it came out or not. Anyway, so then we went into the control room because Jerry said, hey, do you guys want to check out my... After the party had been, you know, a couple mm-hmm. hours in and, you know, people were starting to kind of clear out. And there was just, like, musicians hanging out at this point. And so, like, Richie Sambora and John Bon Jovi and Sheryl Crow and me and my band... I'll walk into the control room to listen. Jerry puts it on. He's like, fuck yeah. And he gets into it. He's fucking pumped about his record. And I guess it was like a little too fucking for John Bon Jovi at the time. And so like Bon Jovi was like, you know, oh,
what
yeah,
year
cool.
was this?
It was 2000, like January of 2000. Okay. And so John Bon Jovi just kind of like walked out of the room.
It was in between Alice in Chains.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was just a little too, it was like...
I remember he had a solo record yeah. that was released, and yeah, there yeah. were some songs that filtered through the radio.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know,
yeah,
he's a talented fucking guy, you know, he's a great songwriter.
Yeah.
And, you know, great singer, amazing fucking guitar player, and another Texas dude, you know?
Yeah, he has a ranch in Oklahoma, I think, that he mm-hmm. has been living at for, like, pretty much throughout the career.
I think it's in Katy.
It's
actually.
In Katy. Too.
Yeah, because that's where the rooster lives.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway,
that he snuffed.
That he's yeah.
Or so, snubbed.
So I saw that that Scott Graham from Thin Lizzy is a fan.
Yeah. We met him. Well, I didn't personally, but we, as in the band, Chris and Sean, met him in Paris when we played this venue called Glazart. He was up the street at like a. Like a Starbucks or something. I don't even know the name of a Starbucks. That's kind of sad. But he was up there just hanging, and they ran into him. And they were like, Scott. And he was like, what? What's up? And I don't know.
That's fucking awesome, though. Have you... I mean, yeah. I can see, as a musician, when I listened to your music, I was excited. And I was like, fuck yeah, this is something, not, this is a record that someone can come over and I can be like, oh, have you heard this? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I can see it making the rounds with music people.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could see Bon Jovi not walking out of the room if you were playing it for him.
Interesting.
You know, not in a bad way that it's pop, but it's so rock and roll and so like earthy and organic.
Mm-hmm.
That I respond to it like, oh, there it is, a band. You know, you can hear the basement.
It definitely has an air of familiarity, and like personally, I don't think it's anything horribly original, but it that air of familiarity attaches to a lot of different people. Like we've had, you know, a lot of people think that we've saved them that are in their 60s. And
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, and that's what I feel like. And I try to listen to music as openly and without age as I possibly can. But I don't think I think I'm responding more to a vibe.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a vibe.
I mean, like, there's a vibe of people sweating and fucking just four people rocking out
together.
It's
really fun music to make, you know? And I think people need to not forget about the fun aspect of making music, you know? Because, I mean, everyone's so, like, hell-bent on... Well, not everyone.
But, no, but...
You know, we got to make something original. Like, what's original, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
it's 12 notes.
Yeah.
There's 12 notes that all of us have had to deal with. The same 12 notes.
So
we got
to figure out what to do with them, you know? And there is stuff that you can do with those 12... notes that, you know, that reach a lot more people than something else you could do with 12 notes, you know?
Yeah.
Like Swans doesn't reach as many people as,
right,
you know, Cheap Trick.
Exactly.
Know? But, I mean, essentially, there's similar notes.
Yeah. You a Cheap Trick fan?
Yeah, I love Cheap Trick. Of
Me
course,
too.
We just got to play with them at the Rocklahoma Festival last year, and man, they just kicked everyone's ass completely
off the stage.
They played right after Korn, And it was like, well, we didn't really, you know, I don't know. I didn't see Korn, but some people did. But Cheap Trick was just, you know, you could hear all the bands playing. You could, because Korn was the only thing playing. You could hear Korn. And then it was just night and day when Cheap Trick came up there. It was like, wow, dudes.
Yeah.
You just got stumped.
Robin can still sing like fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's great.
I mean, you're not supposed to be able to sing that good for that long.
No, I mean, it's like, wow. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's the last of the big star movement, you know, that
yeah,
whole.
Yeah, that's true.
It, I mean, but they made it stadium rock.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
they
managed
really did.
To take that Chilton Bell kind of vibe, or that, you know, Lennon, McCartney, Harrison vibe, and just make it like, bah! you know, just big rock. You know?
Yeah, and you don't feel you do that unabashedly. Your music is big; it belongs in a big place with a bunch of people fucking, you know, into it. And I think that I'm attracted to that too. I think. When people can pull that off without being cheesy or pandering to an audience. Like sometimes the Def Leppard, they're trying so hard to be in a stadium on their records that you're like, okay, I get it, dude.
Well, they already, I mean, why even try to maintain that? You're living the rest of your life off of pyromania and hysteria.
Yeah.
What else do you need?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Retire. Yeah. Go raise a family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they want to make music. So, yeah. I mean, that's good. They still want to make music. It's just.
Have you met Robert Plant?
I have not. Well, yeah, actually, I kind of met him. I was walking.
I'm going to keep on, because you don't give up information very well. I'm just going to name names, because so far I've kind of hit the thing. Hey, do you like Cheap Trick? Oh, yeah, I just played with him. Like, all right. Okay, so tell me. So you saw him.
So my encounter with Robert Plant, you know, after a long time of comparisons, was interesting. I was walking down Congress with my pit bull, and she was ahead of me. You know, there was like a good leash ahead, and she went around the corner. And so I, like, followed her around the corner right by, like, Blackmail and Docks kind of over there. And I followed her around the corner, and she had gotten up on Robert Plant. And I was like, whoa, you know, and he gave me this look like, get your dog off of me. And I was like, sorry, dude. And he's like, I'm on the phone.
Yeah.
And I was like, I get it, dude. All right. So I kept walking, and I was just like.
That's a cool.
We had a moment there where he was not happy about my animal that not apparently controlling it to. But yeah, I mean, I would like to meet him under other circumstances, of course.
Yeah. That would have been Robert Plant. Hey, big fan.
If you hear this, Robert, I'm sorry.
I doubt he listens
sorry about
my
dog.
Oh, also.
Well, he is now.
Yeah. That's goddamn right. Right. Listen, I did something on Twitter a year and a half ago or so, a couple of times in the middle of the night. I'd be like, man, I can't believe Robert Plant is guest DJing on KLBJ, and he's just playing Led Zeppelin. I thought he'd play something else. That's weird. He'd play his own music. Like, tons of people would write me, he is not on KLBJ. You're such a lie. Like, they just get really mad. So I wonder if it ever got back to him. Like, you know, hey, were you on KLBJ playing Led Zeppelin?
Who is this bloke?
Yeah, who is this? So you guys are going to do another big European tour. Coming up in March.
It is.
Are you doing? You're doing South By?
We're doing South By, and then we
zipping through.
Mm-hmm. Then we go over to the UK for a week and a half or so, and then with a Canadian band called Monster Truck, who are awesome. Mm-hmm. We just played a festival with them in Eindhoven,
in
the Netherlands, and met those guys for the first time, and they're really cool. And then we go over to Europe with a band from Sweden called Horizont.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the singer or somebody's the younger brother of Joachim from Graveyard.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So we're going to do that. Our tour manager is going to be Ben from Orange Goblin.
I don't know who that is.
It's a UK band.
Oh, cool.
That is really popular.
Oh, good.
Amongst this genre. And and then Robert Plant's going to be on merch. You're selling merch.
Hey, you know what's fucked up is, do you know who A. Whitney Brown is?
A. Whitney Brown?
Yeah.
That's a cool name.
He was a pretty famous comic. He became a writer on Saturday Night Live, and then he was a guy that came on in the time of, like, Dennis Miller doing the news. He he would come on and do like these rants.
Wow, he looked like a real
straight. Yeah, he looked like a real straight guy, but he'd come out and do like these rants pro marijuana or whatever. But he's married to Carolyn Wonderland now, and he lives here.
Oh, is he?
And like I was at a show of Carolyn's, and I was like, wow, that merch guy looks like A. Whitney Brown from Saturday Night Live. That's so weird.
Oh, but wait, it is.
Could very well be, yeah. I mean, isn't he married to Patty Griffin, Robert Plant?
Yes.
Go to her shows. Go check out her merch booth, because that's where you're going to find
him. You know, I should probably know more about Robert Plant.
No, you shouldn't.
I don't.
No. No. And the only reason I brought it up is because he's a big rock guy here in town.
Absolutely. Yeah. Probably the biggest rock guy.
Yeah.
But he's not doing... He's the biggest rock guy that isn't doing rock.
No,
I think you should do rock again. I'm going to campaign for that guy to play in a rock band.
But you
band
saw
again.
Him up even close. Just a little... Does a guy like that say, like, hey, man, I'm too tired. I'm like...
No, he can do it, man. He can relive it. He could, the Continental, he could do like,
that
you
is
know,
true.
A residency there with like a bunch of young cats playing and, you know, backing them up. And it could be like a really cutting edge band with Robert Plant singing. I mean, what's he got to lose?
He had that.
What's that?
He did. He had it. It was like David Grissom.
But was it a folk thing?
No. It was David Grissom and Donnie Wynn from like Robert Palmer's band. And
I'm talking like amplified heat.
You're right. Yeah. Or maybe Scorpion Child.
I mean, we would. You know, I would. I'd step aside.
Well, maybe he'd need a harmony singer.
I'd do harmonies for him.
Yeah, Patty Griffin does. So what else? So what's going on South by? When are you guys going to put out another record? What's going on with that?
We're gonna. It looks like after July.
Like you have one recorded, or are you going to start recording?
We're demoing right now.
Okay. Sorry, I'm not trying to put the pressure on. I'm just excited.
No, I'm just just thinking. So we go to Europe again, and then we come back and do a East Coast run, I believe, and then we go back to Europe for the festivals, and we play like their festival season.
Yeah,
and then we come back sometime in July, and I think at that point is when we're going to start like. Doing the album.
Okay.
And then hopefully the turnaround of getting the album done and getting it released isn't going to take a whole another year.
Yeah.
So maybe we could even start campaigning, if you will, on that album, you know, shortly into 2015.
Yeah. Are you playing some of those new songs now? Are you like,
we're
when
incorporating
you play-
in new stuff or new, or like even songs that aren't totally complete yet? We'll play them just to try them out
cool.
and see how the
yeah,
audience
fuck yeah.
reacts.
That's, I mean, that's what a band like yours, that's what I would want from you. A real rock band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want you guys to work something out. I want to see some fucking off the cuff, you know, shit going on. Just to know that it's real.
It's real, man.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. And that's the thing. It's not a facade. I've seen you and Sean around for years, and I can't tell you, like, I mean, you... I always know who you are, and I'm always like, what the fuck are those guys doing? What are they doing? Like, what are they up to? Like, what are they... There's something going on. See you leaving Alexandra's house, or Aaron would be leaving... Sean would be leaving Alexandra's house or something when I was over there making a video. Like, what's going on? You know? You know what I mean? Like, you guys... You seem like you have drive and purpose, and that's what you seemed like before you had this record out. Did you have records out then?
I mean, you know, that's the thing. I always want to be hungry to some degree, you know, whether it's like artistically. I mean, you know, we don't make money, so there it is, you know. So it's like we really enjoy the earthy aspect of we just get to
you
go
places.
You
open for Cheap Trick and you're not millionaires?
Well, it was a festival.
I'm joking.
It'd be sweet if we could open for them. Yeah.
Cheap Trick's not even rich. Hey, what do you think about this? You're hungry and you stay hungry.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's important for an artist to stay somewhat
Fuck
hungry.
Fuck yeah, of course. Well, to me, that's the difference between like seeing Cheap Trick and seeing the Rolling Stones. To me, the Rolling Stones seem like guys that have made $1 million. Cheap Trick is a band that's still like on the campaign trail, trying to get your vote, to me. That's how they play. They're still hungry.
I mean, you know, Cheap Trick has made millions of dollars throughout their career, but, you know, I'm sure they still live in, you know, North Central Illinois.
Yeah, they live in Rockford.
Rockford. So, I mean, that's right there is amazing. Yeah. Like, they kept it roots,
you know? They're that band.
And I think a lot of bands, you know.
You think you guys would move to like LA or something? Or you like
living No, we're not going to.
I like
Seattle
that.
Or somewhere before LA. Yeah. You know.
But you like it here?
Our drummer lives in Seattle.
Oh, he does?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does that work? Like Austin. Okay, you know, it's not what it was when I moved here.
No. Well, how does it work with your drummer living in Seattle?
It works. He just comes in. Well, he just joined the band, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a death metal drummer before this.
Can he cop the same groove?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because that's not a death metal groove that's happening on your feel.
He's a mastermind. This kid can play anything.
Yeah. You could get laid to your music.
Death
metal is not like a real...
I actually had a girl that I was just like dating, a few times. We went out and she always wanted to have sex to my music. And that was really strange.
That is too strange for me.
So we didn't really hang
I've had the thing on shuffle. And you're getting the worst part is having comedy albums on your thing.
It just pops up, yeah. And there's a.
Did you ever go to the store?
Then there's Kevin Hart, and you're like, okay, you're like,
it's Gilbert Godfrey.
Yeah, Gilbert.
A guy goes to the doctor.
That would be the worst.
Yeah, but when my jams would pop up on the iTunes, I have to be like, hey, I gotta stop.
Like I gotta pull out.
It's too weird.
Yeah,
this is just too weird because you're gonna start thinking about it, and B, you're thinking, then all of a sudden
you're gonna be thinking about what she's thinking about. Knowing that it's you, and you're like, well, we're already in this moment. You know, there's just too much going on right there.
when you get it on with Johnny, he puts on his slowest jam.
It's almost like, and if she wants to hear it, it's almost like a weird obsessive thing. Yeah. She's like, oh, Johnny. You know, play the piano for me.
Are you going to Rocklahoma this year?
I'm not sure. I guess.
You should.
Yeah. Well, Weston's nodding his head. What are you saying, Weston?
Yeah.
Are we going? We're going.
That's a tremendous festival.
I don't really know who's playing this year.
To me, it almost seems like all the rock bands that tour play that festival. You know what I mean? Like all the rock bands that aren't like indie rock playing the ACLs or whatever.
Yeah, we've played a few festivals and had some common bands. You know, we've had some bands that are they seem to play every festival, like the Butcher Babies. They're like these two topless, well, they used to play topless, but they're like these two like large-breasted girls, very, very nice girls. But they play every festival that we play. Like, I don't know why or how or, you know, who organizes it, but there they are. Why would we even take the stage if we don't know that they're present?
So, yeah.
Like, they're at every festival they get booked on that we do. So, I mean, there's a common denominator there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not stylistically the same. You know, it's just bands, random bands that tend to play the same festivals that we do.
Yeah.
We haven't played a whole lot of festivals with like stuff to us, you know.
Let me ask you this, because your band is like, I mean, it's like pedal to the metal. Like, I hate to use this phrase because it makes me sound like an old person that can't think of cool ways to describe things. But there's like a Take No Prisoners vibe. When you perform, do you have a competitive at all, any competitive feeling? Like, I'm going to be the fucking Scorpion. Okay, Scorpion Child is the only band they're going to remember tonight. Or are you like a more of a communal guy?
Because
there has to be a certain amount of like, I'm going to fucking, these people will not forget Scorpion Child.
I think it's a good way to put on a good show.
Yeah.
To have
that hunger
mindset.
Yeah. Take No Prisoners. Well, your music is like that. If you didn't perform like that, it would be terrible. It would be weird.
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes along with making albums too.
Yeah.
I think we could definitely make a folk album at some point, or we could make there's so many different things.
You could go into an acoustic phase.
There's so many different styles of music that the band collectively enjoys that I think we could really go in any direction and make it like okay, you know? Yeah. Like people, you know, every time we fall, we get back up on 2 feet again, you know? So it's like, I'm really not worried about like losing an audience because we decide to do like a dark goth record or something, you know, like
that's cool.
Just if we decided to do that, we would
an artist.
We would do that you know, strategically,
yeah,
we would put out a few, you know, albums that have a similar thing, and then we would put out that album.
Who,
just to see, you know.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you don't like it. That's doesn't mean we're not going to make it, you know.
Right.
It's where we were. Because, I mean, it's really being in a band, as you know, is like a stamp of, it's like a piece of time. Mm-hmm. And what you're going through at that time is you know, being filtered through your music. You know, that's the way that you're expressing yourself at that one given time. So, you know, it's not, we're not writing for a specific fan base to, you know.
You're just expressing yourself.
Appease them. Yeah. We're
you're
expressing ourselves. Yeah. So, you know.
Let me ask you this. Where did you make this record?
This last one?
Scorpion Child, yeah.
The Scorpion Child album was done with Chris Frenchie Smith.
Oh, okay. That's the deal.
That is the deal. And it was It was done at the Bubble.
Yeah.
And it was also done at our rehearsal space. And it was also done at our rehearsal space that we then afterwards acquired. And it was actually cool because we didn't have to pay for studio time to do the vocals, and we just had a long time to make the album. You know, but I don't want that long of a time to make the next album.
Okay, that was going to be my next question.
You know, like, people are afraid of that. They're like, you know, you have your whole life to make your first album.
But 6 months to make your next
album. If I have a new album, if I formed a new band tomorrow, and then we release our first album, I didn't have my whole life to create that album.
No.
So I've had other bands with other albums.
So
I truly feel like it was only a 3-year process to make this album. So if we have a year to make this next one with like this awesome new lineup that we have going on, you know, I feel like it's going to be like incredible.
Yeah.
I feel like having those limitations is going to make for a more, it's definitely going to be a more abrasive album. It's going to be a harder hitting album. Like, I can tell right now, it'll have its like mellow moments, but it's going to be like, and not because we're on a metal label.
It's the next step on your journey.
Because, and not because, you know, in the late 70s, things got more like heavy, you know, but I just think it, you know, it's not like, you know, in 5 years, we're going to cut our hair like Metallica and then like, it's going to go from there, you know.
Have you met those guys?
We have not, no.
What about the Sword?
I've met, you know who I met? Jason Newsted.
Oh yeah, he's fucking super nice.
I met that guy once. Yeah, the Sword. Yeah, we know this. We know the Sword.
Yeah.
Those guys are. We know the Sword.
I like them a lot. I like what they're doing.
Yeah, they do really cool stuff.
They freak me out.
Yeah, we're like fans
of the
Sword.
Freaks me out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're fans of him on that metal show too. I've seen him.
Yeah. His trunks worn a Sword shirt before.
So what is the process with you guys, and how does the writing happen? Is it you knock it out in a room together?
I think every song happens, you know, every song happens from a different
source,
you know, perspective, you know.
Give me a couple scenarios. You come in with like, so the last song that you brought to the band.
Well, we could be on a, you know, a boat or a ferry or something and come up with a song idea. I mean, you just never know when the song idea is going to pop up, you know.
But is it a collective writing process, or is are you the guy that writes the words? No one else really writes words?
I definitely am. I'm the one that writes the words.
But you come in and maybe they've got a jam going.
I'm not saying that's the way
it has
to be.
No,
it's just the way
but that's
been
kind of how it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And usually it's like myself and one other guy, or sometimes it's even those two, and they come to me, you know. It's just like, it's people coming to people with things, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's good. That's healthy, and that then
it's
that
a reciprocation
way
of ideas, and
right. Everyone has ownership of the music, then it's more at stake and more.
We haven't done the thing yet where we like, well, I get 80% in the song, and
you guys
can fight for the rest.
One piece of advice. Do it before there's any money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Make that decision before, because then you're really doing it with a soulful and honest, and you're very aware of how much you actually contributed to a song. As soon as there's a bunch of money on the table, you're like, wait a minute,
Yeah, I guess it could be a bummer when you want to come up with a song and write as you are creating an idea, like someone brings it to the table. All right, this is an idea that I have that I want 80% of it. So
yeah, that makes it weird. But but honestly, and I know this is weird and I'm not giving you unsolicited advice. I'm just saying if you guys haven't figured out a way to do that, do it before there's money involved, because it really, people tend to think that, hey, we should repeat the chorus twice is songwriting at that point. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, oh, wait, people are getting paid to write these songs? Hold on a second. It was my idea to do that chorus twice. That's songwriting.
Yeah.
I put the chorus there again where there was once nothing.
Bad things do happen.
Yeah. Anyway, so you're in the process of demoing now. When you demo, do you do them in your rehearsal place? You got a little recording situation?
Yeah, I have I just do it on the laptop. I have a device that records. It's like an Apogee device that actually records quite well.
Just like the whole band?
Mm-hmm. And then I have everybody overdub, you know.
So. Oh, cool. Yeah.
The demos sound pretty brutal and abrasive.
Really?
I mean, yeah, it's cool. It gives you that, you know, well, if on the heaviest end, this is what we can sound like.
Yeah. You know what I like? I love Frenchie. You know, I don't know if you know anything about me or that stuff, but like I moved here in 1991. I went to work at Whole Foods. I transferred from Whole Foods in Houston here, and I lived in this recording studio, the Congress House. It's owned by this guy, Mark Hallman. And I worked in the meat department because that was the only place that had openings. And Frenchie and his friend Brandon had just moved from Oklahoma, and they worked in the grocery department. And so we became fast friends.
At the Whole Foods right up here?
No, the Whole Foods that's now like a Sprouts or something in Brody Oaks at Lamar and...
That's where Whole Foods was?
That's where the second Whole Foods was, yeah.
Yeah!
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so we would, you know, on our breaks, like go smoke weed on the back loading dock and shit like that. And Frenchie, you know...
Tell me more.
We were great friends, and I was a huge fan of his music and stuff, and he would come and record. Not, like, I lived in this fully functioning recording studio, but I wasn't allowed to use the stuff. Way before 16 Deluxe. And so he and Brandon would come over, and we would just, like, set up a four-track in the middle of this super nice studio that, like, Ani DeFranco recorded in, like, Oasis and shit like that. But, like, it would just be us with a four-track in the middle of the place and, like, a 57 instead of, like, a nice microphone or something. And then he went into total shoegazer stuff, and then 16 Deluxe just, you know, totally blew me away.
What was that pre-16 Deluxe stuff that you guys were demoing?
The band was called Glaze. Oh, you got to get him to play. There's a song called We Are the Astronauts. It's a fucking awesome song.
I mean, is it like Van Halen or what?
Oh, no, no, no. It's like crazy people, like Sonic Youth and
who's singing?
And Daniel Johnston. I think it was Frenchie singing. Awesome. I think both of them sang. Tell him, just listen.
Can you with a few copies of that?
I don't have any of it. I used to have Glaze. I used to have Glaze on a cassette. All you have to do is tell Frenchie next time you talk to him, go,
Glaze.
And say, and he was kosher. I swear to God, you will get the biggest smile from him.
And he was kosher.
Yeah, but you got to say it like that, because that was one of the breaks in the song. That's what they said.
Can you need to text me that information.
Okay, I will.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so anyway, what I was going to say is it's been interesting to see Frenchie go through this and become such an amazing, like, rock and roll producer, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, such a great... He captures performances so fucking well and gets the sound, you know, all nice.
Yeah, he definitely is he fun to work with? You know, for me, he works really well with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't really, like... You know, it seems like guitars are really exciting to do with him because he's a great guitar player and he has, you know, but we've done like several recordings with him.
Yeah.
And so I think we've developed an understanding for one another. Like he kind of becomes a part of the band in a way.
That's really important, and that's always great to have a guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but with... He likes to do vocals, which is reasonably rare.
amongst producers and engineers, you know, because it's such a, it can be a time-consuming process. But also, he's really big on like national, that, natural. Yeah. Well, I don't take a long, long time, but like, I guess that when we did vocals, it was spread out over such, you know, his schedule's so busy, you know, I would come in and, you know, lay down some vocals. So I never really got a good idea of, like, you know, how fast I can work. But I mean, I could probably cut an album in a week.
Oh, yeah.
Just a few hours here, a few hours there, you know, but it's, he likes natural performances, which is pretty important to me for this style of music, and not all this pitch correction and all this,
of course,
pop
that's,
style.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that really, like, ultimately the thing that I'm attracted to most in your music is the fact that it's organic and it's real, and I'm getting some guys that are bashing something out, and the good time is actually, it's contagious when you're listening to it. It's fun.
You can hear that it's important for this entire movement of rock that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Like, they're natural performances.
Yeah.
You can hear who's the talent and who's the... You know, and it's not even about, like, you know, who's got the best voice. It's like, sometimes it's like, who's got the interesting voice or the character.
Dude, I would take Lou Reed over Celine Dion any fucking day of my life.
Yeah, and I think that there's plenty of people that would.
Yeah. Totally.
As opposed to plenty more people that wouldn't, because she's just got such a...
Those people are idiots.
She's had huge hits, you know?
Yeah, but you know what I mean. I would rather have someone tell me the truth than fucking show me a major scale.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just the thing, like, Doug Yule had a better voice, but Lou Reed had the voice.
Yeah.
He was the interesting guy.
Yeah. Yeah, character.
You know?
Your voice has a lot of character. A lot of character.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it's a hard... I'll lay off you after just a couple more questions. Here's a technical question for those of you who like technical questions out there. How's your voice hold up on the road, man?
Actually, quite well.
Good. That's good to know.
It's when I come back and take long periods of rest that it starts to be abused.
Do you warm up and then you get, like, after a few, like a week on the road, you're like, I don't have to anymore. I'm just constantly like, you know?
Well, I always do. Yep. You know, I just make my warm ups longer when
you need to.
When I need to. And also, the longer the set you're playing, you shouldn't warm up as long.
Right.
People think, okay, I'm playing like an hour and a half. You know, I got to warm up for an hour and a half. It's like, well, you got to be careful with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would never do that.
Yeah. Like, you got to be really careful with that because, you know, and talking.
Yeah.
The day you have a big show is...
That's the worst.
Can be a bummer.
That's good to hear.
It holds up good. I mean, it's, you know, my voice, I'd say in my last band or whatever, like, I'd say my voice isn't as clean as it used to be.
Okay,
but
I
it's
think
got
that
a lot
happens.
More character.
Yeah,
I think now there's more I can do with it. Like, I can still do that stuff.
Yeah,
but it's not crystal clear like it was when I was younger. You know,
but it's got, maybe it has its own little story to tell now.
Yeah, there's definitely more whiskey and
smoke
and
like
life.
Yeah, yeah,
in the voice, you know. So, you know, and that's. It's not the only kind of voice that I have. I have several different voices that I can use. Like, I do my own, like, little noise thing, and then I do a folk thing that's just me, you know, and they're both different from one another.
How do people find that stuff? Is there anything out there?
Well, they don't yet.
Oh, okay. Well, you're just out there. All right.
Well, for years I've been doing it, but I've been hiding it
from
people because I don't want people to hear it right now.
Okay.
Not that it's not good. It's just, like, my art... is really got to come out at the right time.
Okay.
You know, or whatever. It's.
I get that.
I can be a little self-conscious about my personal stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's good to have a little something to keep back there when you're putting so much out there. Yeah. You guys have a good time together on the road?
Yeah, of course.
Like, you have out there, because, you know, it's not money-making venture. But I do know people that are miserable on the road. And at one point, I remember I was miserable on the road. And a guy who's a great rock and roll manager now named Paul Nugent. He was my booking agent then, and he told me one time, like, I was complaining and just complaining, and he was like, dude, you should just fucking go home. Fuck this shit. And I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, if your heart's not on the road,
if you're not having, like, the best time just hanging out in your hotel room with those dudes, don't do it, because you're not making any money doing this, and you should go get a job where you can, like, support yourself for real instead of this kind of crazy life. And then I realized I made a conscious choice that day that I would try to always have a good time in what I was doing, because I was living a better life than most people were getting to live, just simply because I was getting to meet people and be in situations that were,
I think, if there were
interesting
people,
and fun. And
if there were people that were miserable, they're either gone,
yeah,
not a part of this anymore,
yeah,
or they're still in the honeymoon, I'm seeing the world fade, like, let me just see the rest of the world and then I'll make that decision.
Yeah.
Once I've seen it all, you know,
yeah,
which is quite a ways that we have to go to see the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But we definitely have on the horizon some South America, some Australia.
Good. That's good to hear.
Mexico, you know, there's a lot of demand from the Americas and not the North America.
That's awesome. That's so good to hear, man.
Yeah.
I'm very, very happy for you guys, man. And so I
think our third biggest market is South and Central America.
It seems like that's, I mean, rock is still alive there.
We've never
there.
Played a single show there, you know.
I just watched this weird thing of Eddie Trunk interviewing the guy from Whitesnake from there, from Brazil or something.
Oh.
I don't know. You know, man, I love that dude. I love that show, that metal
Trunk,
show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tweet at him, and he has tweeted back at me a couple of times.
Has he really?
Oh.
That's yeah. Awesome.
He's a tweeter backer. It was during
Does he follow you?
No, he doesn't. But this is what happened. Kiss got inducted into the... Or they announced that Kiss was going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And they interviewed each member of Kiss, and it came out on RollingStone.com, like, that day, each of the interviews. And then they basically flat out asked Gene Simmons, like, do you credit Eddie Trunk with any of this? Because, you know, no one else goes literally to a podium and speaks for 5 minutes on your behalf and basically tells everyone in the world that they're stupid because you're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Do you think that he has something to do with this? And also, why won't you go on his show? And he's like, oh, I've invented metal, and I don't think whatever Kiss has done. And then it really made me mad. So I texted, or I tweeted at both of them, because Gene Simmons was on The Celebrity Apprentice. I was like, dude.
Did Gene say anything?
No, but Eddie did. I was like, Eddie, you're like totally responsible for this. And Gene, you'll go on fucking Celebrity Apprentice, but you won't go on that metal show. And then
does he not go on that?
No, he hasn't been.
Yeah,
no, he's just a jerk.
He's a jerk.
I don't care if he hears this and hates me.
Well, no, I mean, I'm sure he should, you know, hear it from someone else too. You know,
yeah,
not that he hasn't already heard it from somebody.
Yeah,
there's probably a lot of people that don't tell Gene Simmons if he's being a jerk.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah.
Just because he's Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
So maybe he needs to be reminded. I mean, I don't know. I've never met the guy. So
I've never met him either. But you know. I don't want to.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people in the world. A lot of fish in the sea.
A lot of fish in the sea.
But Eddie Trunk, man, like, something I have to say, you know, because you should also tweet, you know, my newfound love with Eddie Trunk. You know, I never saw his show because I've never had a TV, really. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I had a TV once. But, you know, let alone a package that includes VH1.
Right.
So, you know, I'm pretty new to seeing his show, but mm-hmm. I've watched a couple of episodes, and I really think what he's doing is an amazing thing. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Eddie, for existing, and tweet at him about this podcast.
I totally will. And listen, I got to say, I was around him. I mean, it was probably like, hey, this is this Eddie guy. When I was on Lars's label at some like New York function thing there, because they're like total bros or whatever. But I've seen every episode of that show, and I just got cable recently. But like, I lived with a girl and we had cable. We broke up. I moved here for 3 years. I watched it online. I've seen every episode of that show, and mostly it's because I'm not even that much of a metal guy. I just like people that are that, they're fucking fans. Like, if you watch this show, they'll be like, oh yeah. They'll have a guy from like Trickster or something on there, and they'll be like, oh yeah, I met you like when I was like 16, I talked my way back, and then they'll show a picture. Like,
it's
those
great,
guys are not
yeah.
fucking around. They really are fucking fans. That's why when they go like, hey, you know, Scorpion Child is one of our top records of the year, that's not just someone doing something that a publicist asked them to do. That's someone that fucking listened to your record, and it is one of their top records. That's so awesome.
There's a theory that our tour manager at the time, when we played Rocklahoma last year, Eddie was at Rocklahoma, and he followed him around the whole time, and I think he was like pushing the band on him. So I got to give it up for Graham for doing that. So I mean, I don't know if that's actually the way that Eddie discovered our band, but you know, that's his theory, Graham's theory. So, you know.
Well, that's good. Well, either way, they wouldn't get behind it if they didn't believe in it. So, and those guys are all cool.
I mean, I'm just amazed that there's not more of the ratings don't allow or whatever. Fuck the ratings. Like, or, you know, just there's not more of that kind of Eddie Trunk show kind of vibe around. I mean, it's...
No.
Like, that's all there is for this whole scene that's incredible, that's about to hit you in the fucking jaw. You know, like, there's bands from all over the world popping up right now. There's going to have to be some coverage.
Yeah. And in my estimation, I do feel like things have to be pushed underground to fight their way back up again. Mm-hmm. Because, you know...
Historically, for sure.
Historically, yeah. And it does... You need... And especially with rock and roll, you kind of need a fight. You need something to rebel against. You have to come out against... And I'm not like, I'm not downing anybody, but like you have to come out and be like, hey, you know what, Justin Bieber, that's enough time for you. Real people just fucking screaming and yelling about their shit is coming back.
Well, I mean, let him have it. You know, the kid can play the drums, whatever.
Yeah, I got nothing against him.
And that can be like bigger news than, you know, Ukraine. Yeah. But I mean,
whatever. I am very proud of you guys. I'm very, very happy for you. And I'm glad to see homeboys doing well and guys that I thought were up to something finally finding out what it was that you guys were up to. And it's great. And yeah, I'm very happy for you. I wish you a lot of success. Is there anything that I'm missing before you go?
I think we just about talked about everything there is to talk about.
Aaron, I will stop the machines now and show you childhood pictures of my cousin Emily so you can laugh. Thank you so much. I wish you guys the best, and thank you. Scorpion Child. Jesus. That's just a fucking great band. What a great guy, Aaron. I saw him on that metal show. Woke up yesterday and I played a gig out of town on Saturday, but came back. I came back late Saturday night. Got up yesterday morning, watched it online, loved it. Hey everyone, get out there and let your voice be known. Do you want more music like this to be made? Well, then get out and buy a record by Scorpion Child. If they're coming to your town, you want to see a show like this, you want a band like this to exist, get out there and go see them. Buy their record, buy a shirt, keep them in business. You know, Frenchie, who produced their record, when he was on this show, the great Chris Frenchie Smith, he said, when you go out and buy a record, you're casting your vote. And you're saying, I like this band, and I want them to go on. All right? So let your voice be known. Buy a Scorpion Child album. All right? I did. They were even on my show. They'll give me an album. In fact, they owe me a vinyl album. So, but I did buy some iTunes action so I could play these songs on here and get into their music. Anyway, look, you guys, get out there. Support Scorpion Child. Okay? ScorpionChild.com. And let's hear some more music from them. It's the song King's Highway, popular song. And I wish them all the luck in the world. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Or buy the vinyl version. I'm just kidding. Here's Scorpion Child. You guys, have a great day. Let's get down.